As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
Hey, and I'm Ben Boland. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right, Ben. We've got a topic today that goes a little beyond our highway system.
Yeah, it's pretty far out.
Oh, man. You just died to use that, weren't you?
I did.
I kind of saw the grin. I thought, you're going to come up with some kind of pun here. But, this one's really far out, Ben.
Yes.
Really far out. Like millions and millions of miles away.
Yes. We are talking about a little something called the Mars Science Laboratory. More specifically, the Mars Curiosity Rover.
Mm-hmm. So the rover didn't make it there on its own, is what you're saying.
Yes. Okay. Yes, precisely.
So how did this all work, I guess? How did the rover actually make it to the planet Mars?
Great question. Let's start by looking at the parts of what they call the laboratory.
Fair enough.
It's got four parts. Now, we know the rover is one part. In addition, it's got a cruise stage. This is where it's going through the outer space area, right? And mm-hmm. then it's got an aeroshell, which is a back shell and a heat shield to sort of protect this craft mm-hmm. while it's descending. It's got a descent stage as well. Now, this cruise stage, what they call this cruise stage, looks kind of like a donut, and it's really wide. It's got 10 radiators around the perimeter, and so this sits over a cone on the back shell this cone holds a parachute, right? And one surface of the cruise stage attaches to what they call the launch vehicle. And we'll get to that because, you know, people who listen to this show have probably already watched some really cool footage of how the vehicle lands. So we don't want to talk too much about that.
Yeah, because there's some really cool animations mm-hmm. that show exactly what was going on. You can actually watch video of what happened, really.
Yeah.
You can see the actual thing itself landing on the surface, but the animations just really bring it home. It shows exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, this cruise stage is mostly made of aluminum. Now, it also has some propulsion to keep the spacecraft spin rate constant, to adjust its orientation, and to assist with trajectory. So it's got 8 thrusters. It's getting them to Mars because, in a way, you know what I was thinking, Scott? In a way, this is the most difficult parking job in history.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to put it, really.
I mean, I have a hard time parallel parking if I'm in an RV or something.
In an RV? Oh, my gosh. That would be hard in an RV.
Only tried it twice.
successful both times, I hope. More or less.
Thank you. You're so kind.
More or less.
Let's call it I was successful 1.5 times.
So this is – very good. This – I tell you, Ben, this gets really complex quickly.
Yeah, so let's keep it high level.
We'll try to keep it high level because there's a lot of information out there. You can dig as deep into certain parts of this as you want to. We'll tell you some of the general characteristics and features of this whole thing, the rover. But if you want to dig deeper, there's a ton of information out there. I mean, everybody's talking about it right now. So this is a good opportunity for you to go out and do some searches for yourself.
Let me fast forward through those next two stages and get to the part we really want to talk about. So we mentioned the aeroshell. Now, the aeroshell, it contains the rover and the what they call the descent stage, and this is to protect these components from any sort of friction with Mars's atmosphere, which, as you imagine, penetrating an atmosphere generates friction.
Probably quite a bit of heat.
Quite a bit of heat, too. So this diameter of the heat shield, it's almost 15 feet wide. That's 4.5 meters.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, and for comparison, NASA notes that the Apollo capsules had heat shields that were 4 meters.
Okay.
So it's a little bit larger than that. Mm-hmm. Now, this aeroshell is a little bit different from any other mission because it has a steering capacity. And when you see all of the steps that it takes to shoot something from Earth to Mars and safely land it, then, of course, you want to have that sort of steering capacity. When it gets to what they call the descent stage, this is just a few minutes before it actually touches down on Mars. It uses rockets to decelerate the entire package, and it has two different bands of telecommunications to keep the lines of communication open. Mm-hmm. And we're often going to see this as we talk about the rover. We're often going to see redundancy. Mm-hmm. I know.
Very nice.
I kid. But this is because there's literally no way to fix it
if
something goes wrong.
Yeah, and we saw that with the previous Mars rover, didn't we?
Yes, sir.
Because this is not the first time that we've been to Mars. There's actually, in fact, four times we've sent surface rovers to Mars in about two decades, I'm guessing that's about
So we had Spirit, Opportunity.
At this than me. I don't know. I found that amazing. We've already been there four. This is our fourth attempt, really, at this. This one, I got to tell you, Ben, it's early on in the game, but this one looks very successful.
Yeah.
Now it's a NASA project. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been working with, the NASA's been working with Boeing. I said we've been, like I'm part of it, right?
Hey, I think if we're humans, we count as part of it.
NASA's been working with Boeing, with Lockheed Martin, and another contractor named McDonnell Detweiler. And, again, fourth attempt at this, and it looks like it's going swimmingly.
Yes, once this descent stage is a few minutes away from the surface of Mars and it's slowing the descent of the actual rover, there was a really tricky moment that occurred when the rover touches down and has to separate itself from the descent stage thing. So imagine, if you would, that you are a Martian. Just imagine how freaked out you are when you see this thing drop down in probably the loudest noise you've ever heard, and then the bolts that attach the rover to the descent stage separate, and the descent stage sort of takes off like a UFO or something. I guess to a Martian, it literally would be a UFO.
Well, Ben, I don't know about Martians, but I'm sure that in the NASA control room, I don't think anybody was breathing at that point. I bet everybody was holding their breath for several minutes. I mean, even though it sounds physically impossible, I'm sure they were, because that was a critical point right there. I mean, if something goes wrong there, all is for naught.
Yes, and luckily, it went perfectly.
Yeah, that's right. And this is not just something that just happened overnight either. This took a long time. This has been in the works for a while. Now, prior to the launch date, there was a lot going on. I don't know how long they worked on this rover exactly. Maybe you have the stats there. But the mission itself from the launch date till the Mars landing, we're talking about 8 months, Ben. And it's not – now, this was something that kind of caught my eye. I wondered about this just for about a minute, and then I figured it out.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you know how far away is the sun from the Earth?
Oh, wow. Let's see. Well, if you're taking 20.
Isn't it? Okay, I'm going to guess. Isn't it? I think it's 92 million miles, or is it 94 million miles? Something like that.
Okay.
92 or 94, I can't remember which. Our science people will tell us that I'm way off. But the mission itself, this thing has traveled 352 million miles in order to be on Mars.
Wow.
Now, that's because, of course, you know, the planet's rotating around the sun, and, you know, it's got to track it. It's got to chase it down, really.
Mm-hmm.
So it's traveling a long, long way, 352 million miles in 8 months to get there. I don't know. It just struck me as odd that it would be that far of a journey.
Yes, and let's while we're playing with numbers, let's talk about some of the stats of the actual rover, Curiosity itself.
Yeah, because there's some cool stuff here.
It's 10 feet long, 3 mm-hmm. meters long, right?
Yeah.
And it is, what would you say?
About 9 feet wide,
yeah.
7 feet tall. Now, that's tall. I was thinking this thing is built like a box, really.
Right,
You know, 10, but... I'm trying to think. Like, I guess it's not going to be doing any high-speed turns or anything, so it's not going to have to worry about tipping over.
Yeah, no car chases.
I'm sure that it's weighted. I'm sure that it's, you know, that's a concern, a huge concern, is tipping this thing over, right?
Right, yeah, so the weight distribution is key.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I know it's heavy. Weighs about 2,000 pounds, so for its size, it's relatively heavy. It's well-packed in that 10-foot by 9-foot by 7-foot cube.
Mm-hmm,
There's a lot going on in there, too. I think we should mention this.
Yeah.
It's nuclear-powered. That's mm-hmm. one thing that stands out about this thing. It's a radioisotope thermoelectric generator, or RTG is what they call it, and that produces electricity, which comes from the decay of plutonium-238. So that's how this thing gets power.
Mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, it's got a lot of thermal protection, you know, to keep all this stuff running correctly. And the thing is, Ben, boy, this is something. The temperatures on the surface of Mars,
yeah,
where this thing happens to be, and I guess we should mention where it is. It's right near the Gale Crater,
yes,
which is near the equator of Mars. And its ultimate goal is to get to a place on the surface called Mount Sharp, which is not very far away from where it is, and we'll talk about that, too.
That blew my mind.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it doesn't have a long way to go, but we'll get mm-hmm. there. But the thing about this thermal protection is that the surface temperatures, they vary so greatly. I mean, it can be anywhere from 86 degrees Fahrenheit.
Which sounds pretty cool. Yeah, toasty, but cool.
That's not bad, right? All the way down to negative 197 degrees Fahrenheit.
A little bit colder.
A dramatic swing in temperatures there. And, you know, it's got about 200 feet of tubing within this thing to heat and cool, you know, using some type of fluid. Keep all these onboard operating systems running cool or running hot. Or, you know, I think most of the time it's going to be actually warming the rover.
Yeah.
Because most of the time it's going to be experiencing cold temperatures mm-hmm. versus hot temperatures.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So that was a lot going on. There's a lot of computers on board.
Yes.
As you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Again, dig into that and find out what you want, because, I mean, we could go on and on for hours about what exactly these computer systems do.
Right. I'm gonna do just a quick mention of two things. There are two computers. Well, as we mentioned earlier, there is I don't want to call it a plethora, because as everyone knows, a plethora is when you have so much of something that it's bad.
Overabundance.
There is an overabundance. How about that? That's a little more fair. Of components in this vehicle. As we look at the cameras, we're going to see that there are almost always pairs of cameras.
Yes. Stereoscopic, right?
Right. And the computers there, the main computers, are redundant as well. There's an A and B pair, and they're sort of operating the way that a dolphin's brain operates while it's asleep. You know, like when a dolphin is sleeping, one half of its brain is experiencing what we would consider sleep, and the other half is active.
The other half is saying, go up and breathe now.
Yeah, right.
Go up and breathe now.
Watch for that shark.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, you'd probably say wake up at that point. but literally, while the rover's operating, one of these computers, A or B, is going to be on, and the other one is going to be in cold storage. It's going to be on hold. It's going to be kept in a cold backup state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, yeah, you mentioned cameras. A total of, get this, Ben, 17 cameras on board this thing. Now, I think they've got just about every angle covered on this. And we mentioned stereoscopic. So we're getting, right now, we're getting basically 3D images from this thing. So that's kind of neat. I was looking at some printouts here of stuff, and you know, it has the old red and blue stereoscopic image look. You know, I'd love to find a pair of those glasses laying around the office. I'm sure we have some.
We have to.
I know we do.
We have so much stuff here.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of stuff. I'm sure that we could look at some of these 3D images in actual 3D, but again, stereoscopic, a little bit different. But,
and there are different types of cameras.
Can we please get to the treads, the wheels?
Yes.
At this point, because I'm excited about this. This
okay.
is, the wheels may be to me personally, Ben. Now, you know what? I do digress. We need to go back to the cameras for just one second.
Okay.
One thing that caught my eye, and then I'll talk about wheels. I promise. One thing that caught my eye is that they're calling these cameras hazard avoidance cameras.
Yes.
And that's because they're scanning the surface in order to be able to determine, well, we better not try to climb over that, or we better, you know, try to go
rocks,
around that.
Obstacles.
Yeah, scramble over that somehow. So I found that unique, and that's kind of the tie-in with, you know, some of the safety systems that we've been seeing in automobiles recently.
Yes.
Accident avoidance cameras.
Good point.
So, but, you know, ours, you know, down here on Earth, I guess, are the ones that are thinking quickly and determining, you know, whether I need to brake or somehow slow this vehicle down.
Real quick,
anyway,
about those cameras.
Loose tie-in.
It has four pairs of what they call the hazard avoidance cameras, or HAZCAMs for the cool kids at NASA.
Yeah.
Two redundant pairs on the front and two redundant pairs at the rear. This rover can go backwards as well as forwards. So
how do they do it, Ben?
We have a reverse.
How do they come up with creative names like HAZCAMs?
Very carefully.
Yeah,
everything
yeah.
about this is very carefully done. Each HAZCAM has a fisheye lens that gives it 124 degrees width and height view. The depth of focus goes from like 4 inches to infinity.
Really?
And I'm reading directly from NASA's press release on that one.
You know what's cool about this is that they've got this all covered, so that they're constantly – and I promise we're going to get to the wheels because that's my favorite part. But
okay.
They're constantly looking around this thing and they're really, really being careful about it. They don't want it to tip over. Mm-hmm. They don't want to, you know, try to climb something that's a little bit too steep and have it, you know, flip over backwards on its back or something, because then it's like a turtle, right?
Right.
There, it's incapable of moving. It's really interesting how they've got all these angles covered and everybody is carefully watching. But they've also got – what this also provides them with is outstanding views of the surface.
Yes.
I mean
– unprecedented.
Unprecedented,
really.
Unbelievable views of the surface. So, you know, watch for some of these great shots to come out soon. I know right now we've just got some early on stuff and, you know, I'll be honest, so-so. right now it's kind of bleak looking. But I think as time goes on, we're gonna be wowed by some of this.
You know, it's kind of pleasant not to see a place filled with McDonald's and Starbucks, frankly.
Yeah, that's right. Just bits of the landing system, the crane and the parachute and all that junk.
Yeah, it's a place to be alone with your thoughts.
That's all laying around on the surface now.
All right, man. I am sorry that you have had to sit through the rest of this for us to get to the wheels.
Oh, the wheels are so cool on this thing. I think that this is something that, you know, you got to kind of look at it. You got to mm-hmm. check out the wheels for yourself. But the interesting thing about the wheels is they're like this tread pattern, right?
Yeah.
And they don't really gauge it by miles per hour traveled or anything like that. You know, there's no speedometer hooked up.
Yeah, it doesn't really work in this situation.
They use the pattern of the wheels to determine, and then they film it, or they have the video camera pointed towards it, and they count how many tread patterns, I guess, they've made in the silty surface of Mars. And one of the interesting things about this is there's a company that helped develop these wheels, and the company's initials were JPL, I guess, mm-hmm. based on, you know, this company that helped develop these things. The pattern in the wheels is Morse code for JPL. How cool is that? So, like, as it's driving across the surface, mm-hmm. it's repeating itself in Morse code on the surface of Mars, JPL, 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 in Morse code. Someone eventually is going to see that and know what that means.
You know, what's funny is that when you say someone's going to see it and know what it means, I think that is optimistic. I hope that's the case. I could easily see the first manned space mission to Mars taking so long that they've forgotten about Curiosity and it becomes like some crazy crackpot story where someone goes, "Have you seen the JPL Morse code on Mars?"
It'll be like a lost thing.
Yeah.
Like a mystery that's never really answered.
Oh, and by the way, the third, not in chronology, but the Mars rover that we forgot to name, or that I missed, mm-hmm. Sojourner.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So we've got that out there.
And there's six of these wheels.
Oh, yes. I'm
interrupting wheels. And they're all independently steered and operated, mm-hmm, and they can swivel, they can do everything. But that, in its own sense, makes it a little bit dangerous in that, you know, you got to make sure that every wheel is pointed the right way and headed the right direction at the right time.
Right.
Now, Ben, I remember I said that they don't really measure anything in miles per hour traveled or anything,
yes,
like that. It's not like, you know, when the astronauts got on the lunar rover, mm-hmm, and they're driving around on the surface and they're jumping and they're, you know,
right,
there's debris flying behind
air.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like that. Get this. This is over 2 years. This mission is going to take 2 years, right? Guess how far they're going to travel in 2 years.
Let's see.
2 years is a long time.
2 years is a heck of a long time. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go with 50 miles.
Oh, okay. I was going to give you another clue. They're on this crater now. They're trying to get to this, mm-hmm, Mount Sharp, right?
Yeah.
Mount Sharp is not that far away. 12 miles is what they intend to travel in 2 years. Now, that's only a distance of about 660 feet per day. So it's a relatively short distance every day that they travel. Again, extremely slow, extremely cautious in the way that they're traveling. But they're trying to get to the base of this Mount Sharp. And the idea is that I think they had some images from past missions to Mars where they determined that at the base of Mount Sharp, it looked like there were remnants of past water. That's what they called it, past water.
Yes.
Some indicators, some landmarks that indicate that, you know, there may have been water on the surface, and that's what they're trying to get to, because that's one of the main goals of this whole thing, is to determine if there was and when there may have been water on the surface. And I think there are a couple of other goals here too. They want to, you know, find out if there's these general basic building blocks of life.
Right.
And they kind of want to determine the atmospheric evolution process of Mars. So they want to find out, and there's more to it than that. There's several other goals, I'm sure, but you know, one of the things that they're doing when they're picking up rocks and they're chiseling away at them, which they can do with this thing, which is cool, and watch it happening. And they sift through the soil, and you know, they gather things. It's really neat how they can watch everything happen, and it's almost like it's very similar to the way they operate the deep sea rovers.
Yeah.
And I think they call them rovers, submersibles that scout around old wrecks.
Also unmanned,
yeah, but not tethered. You know, this one is not tethered by any means.
No,
you can have
not at all.
352 million mile tether, if you want to do it this way.
I want to do a couple things before we get out of here.
Sure.
I want to read a laundry list of the equipment. The Mars rover right now, Curiosity, has more than 160 pounds of purely scientific equipment.
Huh.
So this includes, but is not limited to, because I want to subject everyone to the whole list, a tunable laser spectrometer, and this will look for organic carbon-containing compounds and determine the ratio of key isotopes. These are vital to unlocking Mars' atmospheric and aquatic past. And it goes back to your earlier
aquatic
point,
past, okay.
Right? A dynamic albedo of neutrons. This instrument can detect hydrogen, so this could also potentially show us if there was ice or water trapped in minerals. And then there's a environmental monitoring station. This reads the temperature, humidity, atmospheric pressure. There's also, let's see, we mentioned those cameras. The primary camera, they've got a mast camera. This is about where an average height human eye line would be. So this is, I don't know if it's really fair to call it the master camera, but this...
It's like the eyes of the...
It's kind of like that.
Do you happen to see when they landed and it was covered with... it was covered with dust.
Yes.
Covered with material.
Yeah.
And then they blasted it with air, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Or something. They blasted it with something and cleared off the lens, but the dramatic difference in that. And I think just to think that through, that how are we going to clean these lenses, you know, if we need to?
I think that was NASA.
Very well thought out.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Can you imagine how embarrassing it would be to spend this much money to get a vehicle onto Mars, dude,
and
then have a dirty windshield?
You know, and Ben, I think that they said something that, you know, this landing really was untested, relatively. I mean, they knew kind of what to expect.
Right.
In a general sense.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you test something like that? I don't think that they were able to actually go through a dry run of how this thing was actually going to land. So there were some tense moments there at the end, I think. You know, when we mentioned that, you know, when it separates itself from the heat shield and, you know, et cetera, you know, these pieces are falling all around it. You'll see some images of what's remaining on the surface. And there's a few things that, you know, some debris now, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, the arm, the crane arm that was there, the parachute with all the tethers involved, you know, that could easily be entangled. It could easily get entangled in that.
Yeah,
the heat shield—that's another thing that could take this whole thing out. So,
right.
Yeah, there's some debris there, but then you'll see like something where it shows all the debris, and then where the rover itself is, and then maybe where it's trying to get to.
And I'm actually kind of glad that we waited till after it successfully landed to do this podcast.
Yeah,
what a
you
bummer
know,
it would have been.
It's cool; they can kind of watch this thing from above too. And
yeah.
I saw some images, and I was thinking like, how do they show this? But you know, there are ships orbiting Mars watching all this happen. Mm-hmm. And I think they said that they were like, I want to say, just ballpark, 200 miles above the surface. I think it's like 180-something miles above. So they're able to watch from above what's going on as well, which is, again, another interesting aspect of this. They've got it covered from all angles.
I'm going to sound maybe a little bit pretentious, and I apologize if I do, but the level of mastery, and even if you want to be honest, artistry about this sort of endeavor is up there with Beethoven's Fifth and stuff. This is one of the best things people have done, in my opinion.
Well, you know what? It seems to get better and better and better.
Oh, one last thing. Remember what we mentioned earlier? I made the joke about manned Mars missions, right?
Yes.
And maybe they wouldn't know why JPL was on the surface.
Yeah.
Well, some people might say, hey, that's a dumb joke, Ben. And that's a fair point, guys. And I'm sorry. But some other people might say, I'm kind of already on Mars in a way.
What do you mean?
Silicon chips mounted onto Curiosity's deck bear the names of people who submitted their names for going to Mars aboard the rover.
What?
Right. So
they're their names are on the rover?
Yeah. So there's like each chip has about the size of a dime. More than 1.24 million names were submitted. They've been etched into silicon using an electron beam machine. And this is one of the same things that's used to create devices in NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. In addition, more than 20,000 visitors to locations of work on the rover at JPL or at the Kennedy Space Center wrote their names on pages that have been scanned and reproduced on a microscopic scale on another chip. So we may not have actual living human beings on there, but we do have their names. And how amazing to be part of history in that way, even if it's a small part.
I stopped listening when you said electron beam machine.
Yeah, I've been using that a lot.
I need to
figure
a
speech.
I need to get one.
You deserve one.
What would we do with that?
We would make
micro devices. What wouldn't we do with
that? That's a better question.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, you know what?
Yeah.
I think we've covered this as much as we can without going extremely deep into each of these segments. You know, like we could,
right.
I love the wheels on this thing. I'll tell you that. You know,
yes,
take a look
do.
At those. Take a look at the propulsion device. This what do we call it? A thermoelectric generator.
Yeah.
Check that out. That's really cool.
Oh, check out at Sarcastic. I think it's at Sarcastic Rover. On Twitter. It's a novelty account, which is just...
I like it already.
A bunch of short statements, you know, by the finger quotes rover.
Oh, that's cool.
We have a lot of stuff here. We have a great article on the website.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. That's,
how the Curiosity rover works.
Very good. There's so much to cover on this thing. I feel like maybe later we could go into the propulsion unit, or maybe later we could go into just about the wheel system.
Yeah, just about the tether arm. Each of these really has enough content to be its own episode.
I think so. I definitely think so. So there's a lot to learn out there. Take a look. It's really early in the mission right now. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a lot of forthcoming information in the next 2 years, I would think. I'm sure it'll slow down after a while, but there's still going to be daily gathering all this information. It's just going to be happening in the background at some point. Right now, it's kind of forefront in everybody's mind. So we're getting a lot of information right now. Maybe towards the end, when they get towards that that Mount Sharp, we're going to find out some more stuff. So keep your eyes and ears open on this one.
Yeah, it's going 6 miles a year, but there's still going to be a lot of stuff happening.
6 miles a year, that's right.
So here's something that's been on the forefront of my mind. Mm. It's something completely different.
Yeah.
If you recall, mi amigo, way, way back in the days of yore, I guess a few weeks ago, you had a couple of stuffed Scott C's.
Yes, I did.
As a representative of the listeners, I was presented with a choice, a one or two.
Yes.
I chose two because I thought that was edgy.
You did choose two. Yes, you did.
And now I've been thinking about this. I have not seen what you have seen. But is that Post-it with a number one on there in any way related to this?
It is, and it's a it's got two sheets attached to it here. I will hand you number one. Don't turn it over yet.
Okay.
This is the second part of the Stuff Scott season. I couldn't decide which one we wanted to do. I think the first one we did was that car with the 30-inch wheels.
Yes, yeah, which is Facebook.
I'm going to say wildly popular on Facebook because it seemed like everybody had something to say about it, good or bad.
Uh-huh, that's true.
I will give it the wildly popular designation. But okay. This one, I think I'll also post the images because these are photos that I took with my cell phone. Okay. Not the highest quality, but this is an unusual vehicle, Ben. Highly unusual vehicle, and I figured I'd just share it with everybody because I had never seen one before. So take a look at your picture here, and folks at home, play along with the Facebook page because I'll post it on the day this broadcast.
All right, and could we have a drum roll, please, for our producer, Casey? And here we are. Whoa,
Ben,
what is this?
What you're looking at is this is a 1962 Jeep FC-170.
Wow.
That is a Jeep.
Would you ever guess that?
Now,
no.
It looks like a work truck.
Oh, I could guess it from the front.
Look at the front,
grill.
It has the very, very, standout or what I want to say, typical Jeep front end with the 7-slot grill and the round headlights and, the usual Jeep shape. But this looks like a work truck. To me, it looks like one of the old Mac semis, really.
Yeah, but
very flat windshield, very flat front cab front design, cab forward design, I guess.
The cab is so modular,
but
though.
I'm looking at this, and you're going to see this on Facebook, but there's a pickup truck bed on the back of this thing, and it goes way back. That pickup truck bed, I'm not doing it justice with my photos here, that is about a 10-foot bed. It's long.
By itself, just the bed,
The bed alone, it's a really long bed on that thing. The whole front cab part from the bed forward lifts up like a semi truck would, like the old design semi trucks
for engine access.
Exactly, and it's very very Spartan inside, very not much to it.
No frills
at all. Definitely work truck inside. This one happens to be equipped with a V8 engine.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't run at the time. I found it on this is the side of the road. I was traveling up in like northern Alpharetta or something like that, maybe even Cumming, Georgia, and it was on the side of the road. I turned around and came back. It's got smaller wheels on it than normally it would have. It normally would have bigger off-road type tires.
Yeah.
I don't know why they did this, but they've done a lot of custom work to this one.
Now, is the scale tricking me here? Is this bed low, or is it just that the vehicle is tall?
No, the vehicle's relatively tall. It's shorter than it usually would be because of the smaller wheels that are on this thing. It's got more like standard truck tires on it now, which are still big. When I'm standing, if you look at this picture, I can look through the through the side window, but I'm nowhere near the top of the thing.
Oh, okay, I see. Okay.
So with bigger wheels, it wouldn't fit in a standard garage, I don't think.
Okay.
It might this way. I'm gonna post one or two images of this. The front image, I think that's the coolest looking thing. The front image of this. It's for sale. $10,000 is what they're asking for this thing. Again, it's a 1962 Jeep FC-170. Mm-hmm. Doesn't run, Ben. I went driving the same way last weekend. Stopped by to see it again because it was still out there, and they wrote, does not run.
It looks in such great condition from the outside.
It really does, and they're asking for trades. It's a cool-looking car, and it's so unusual that I thought, some people might get a kick out of seeing this. I've never seen one of these, and if I have, I guess I just didn't realize it was a Jeep.
This is the first time seeing it. When I saw the side view, I almost wondered if it was an aftermarket mod.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a Jeep product, but the engine is aftermarket.
Okay.
Because at the back of this one, and I don't know if I have an image of this or not, but someone has just applied a decal to the back gate that has a Chevrolet symbol with the word Jeep written inside of it. Because it has it now has a Chevy V8 engine.
Uh-huh.
But it's still a Jeep vehicle, so that's their little play on, you know.
I'll allow it. I think that's good.
So it's a Chevy symbol with a Jeep in the, in, you know, written in the back of it. But the front image of this thing, I think, is the coolest looking image. It's a neat vehicle. It'd be fun to have.
Yes.
It almost looks like it should be a dump truck, but it's not.
I think it would be really fun just to drive around and hang out. You would run the tailgates, my friend, the tailgating parties.
Yeah, I think so. This is it's just a cool car, and I thought, you know, so unusual that, you know, share it with our listeners.
Yes, we also have loads of other weird car stuff around the office that we can share.
Definitely.
We might not spoil the surprise yet, but everybody should stay tuned for us with that. And we are about to get out of here. We have gone to Mars and back to 1962.
Yeah.
We hope that you guys enjoyed this. Some of our fellow podcasters have some great information about the latest Mars mission, and we would recommend you check them out. We also have our article on the website, How the Rover Works. You can send us a Facebook message. You can send us a tweet. You can send us an old-fashioned letter. We'd love to get that. Our address is 3350 Peachtree Road. Is it Road or Street, Scott?
I think it's Road.
Road, Suite 5, 1500, Atlanta, Georgia, 30326. And if you want to send us an email, preferably with a picture of a strange car you found, or some art, or an anecdote, or a suggestion for an upcoming topic, we'll totally give you our email address. It's
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.